Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome to a very important show. This is an exciting episode for us.
You're exciting.
Yeah? Thanks, man.
Yeah, you're welcome. Throwing compliments around all day. This guy, yeah. Alex Kessler. Co-host a podcast, Masters of Modern, with co-host Ben Bateman.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at the MMCast.
You can. You can follow us on Twitter at the MMCast. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Kess Wiley. We're also on Instagram, YouTube. Pretty much, if it's a social media site, there's some version of us, including some weird, brand new, super cool audio social media thing that Ben's doing.
Yeah, this thing called, it's an app called Anchor. It's just launched. It's brand new. It's super awesome. It's like Twitter meets radio, or like podcasting on Twitter, but very short form, 2-3 minutes at a time.
Radio.
And I'm doing a show called 10 Minutes of Magic. Every single day, I do like 2 to 4 little blurbs about magic, all different formats, interviewing people, what have you, and just sharing thoughts. Like, this is what, you know, my strategy for new draft formats are, or like, Kessler, tell me why Commander's so awesome, or, hey, Eric, what are the 3 greatest parts of magic from a game designer point of view? Like, just all kinds of questions. And if you guys like magic content and just having new stuff all the time, you'll really, really like this app. There's content for everything. So download the app. It's called Anchor. 10 Minutes of Magic. I'm having a really good time with it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So what's the big news you were talking about before I...
The reason this is such an exciting episode is because we are announcing the 2 teammates that are going to be joining me at Grand Prix San Antonio at the end of the month for the Team Unified Modern Tournament. We put this whole thing out there, and we asked people, you know, if you donated this month to Patreon any amount, or you left a new comment, rated and reviewed us on iTunes, we were going to randomly pick from our Patreon donators and the people that rated and reviewed since we introduced it, and then we were going to announce them on the podcast, and we're about to announce them. So that's exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, real exciting stuff.
When during the episode do you want to announce it? Do you want to do it now, middle of the episode, end of the episode?
Should we do 1 now and 1 later?
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right. So the first one is we are going to be announcing that Stephen St. Clair.
Woo, Stephen!
Yes.
Team Masters of Modern.
Yeah, welcome to the team, Stephen. I should do that in a bit. I should do more like a Gandalf voice. Welcome to the team, Steven. That wasn't very
good. Are you like a fellowship? Are you taking these decks to Mordor to destroy them?
Maybe. I would hope that if we were the fellowship, I'd be Boromir. I mean, I know that would make me evil, but...
Yeah, don't you die? I know, he's not evil. He's just easily corruptible.
He's the single best character in that entire trilogy. He's my favorite
character. Not a Gimli kind of guy?
No, like, there's no one better than Boromir in that. It's just not even close. He has all the best lines. His death at the end of the first movie is the best part of the trilogy.
So no character... Gandalf. Gandalf is better than Boromir.
I mean, Gandalf...
Ian McKellen is a international treasure.
I mean, Ian McKellen's phenomenal. And, like, his the scene after he dies when he's like, "Run, you fools!" And then they're out there, and Aragorn says, like... He's like, "Boromir, get them up." And Boromir's like, "Give them a moment for pity's sake." Like, he's just my favorite. I love that.
Have you heard the theory? We'll talk about it at the end of the podcast because we're getting derailed here. But yeah. I want to talk about the reason Gandalf said, "Fly, you fools."
Why? Because of the Balrog?
No, we're going to talk about it at the end. So, hint, there's going to be a non-magic moment about Lord of the Rings at the end of this episode. But... Tell.
Back to Stephen St. Clair. So, Stephen, welcome to the team. We probably will just be Team Masters of Modern. I mean, it would be cool to have like a clever name. On the other hand,
you could be like the Team Masters of Modern Velociraptors.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The North Dakota Barnstormers or something like that. A name like that. So anyway, that's the big announcement. We're going to announce the other winner at the end of the episode. Stephen, thank you so much for your continued support. We're really excited to have you on the team. And this is going to be an absolute freaking blast.
Yeah.
So today, we're going to be doing a little bit of a Team Unified Modern conversation.
Yeah.
We've been doing some reading, and we've been like looking over the cards and thinking, okay, what do we think the meta call is going to be? I don't think we're going to too specifically reveal our plan for our team on
here. No, that's a secret. Plus, we need to work with... We'll talk about kind of how you would go about picking a team and important things to keep in mind, and that's going to be dependent on what our your teammates are going to be good at and what decks they are proficient in and what they are best at.
Picking the decks and all of that will be just determined by the team. So we couldn't really announce it on here. But we will talk about an overview of the format.
It's a collaborative process.
And what people have been saying online and what we think the best cards are.
Teamwork.
Yes, exactly.
Togetherness.
Team building.
It's about friendship and relationships and working together.
That is the gist of what we're doing. So now we are going to get into the episode. Did we forget anything? I guess the last thing we should point out is that, Steven, you donated on Patreon. We thank you for that. We thank everyone who donates on Patreon, and it helps keep the podcast in business. In fact, guys, the reason we're able to fly me to San Antonio for this Grand Prix is because of the Patreon. Yeah. Without the Patreon, this would not be something that us on our meager podcast budgets would be able to afford, but we did. So if you guys want to support the podcast and keep things like this happening, we're so excited for this. It's patreon.com/themmcast. It's going to be an absolute blast, and let's get into the episode.
Yeah, so Team Unified Modern, why don't you explain or give a brief explanation of exactly what that means from a rules perspective?
So the long and the short of it is that you have to build three decks with a full 75, or more, but in this case, I imagine our decks will all be 60 with 15 cards sideboard.
One of you should definitely play with a Battlewits deck, because that would be the hotness.
No. So... So you have to build three decks, and they have to have three completely unique card pools. Now, that does not just necessarily mean the copies of four. It means that aside from cards with basic super types, you have to actually play with no more than one deck with a single card in it. So if I have a single copy of Path to Exile in one of my decks, why I would have that, I have no idea. But if that was the case, I can't put the other three Path to Exiles in another deck.
Yeah, it's not the four of rule across all three decks. This is a rules change. It used to be that way.
Yeah.
But they changed it, I think, last year, so that now it's no card can show up in two decks.
Exactly. So you have to come up with three unique strategies completely. And that's kind of how it works. There's not really all that much else to it aside from sort of making the correct metagame calls. And we've been talking about it a lot. I mean, there are decks that are distinctly powerful in a format like this because they don't require you to draw on the card pool too heavily. At the same time, we mentioned this a little bit before, but it's like, okay, think about it. You're going to look at a full room, thousands of people, and you know there's no chance you're going to see more than one-third of that room play any one deck.
Right. Well, and part of that also is, you know, we talked about this before, is, and what you're kind of referring to is the metagame.
Yeah.
Picking a deck for a tournament so often is dependent on metagame, and in Modern, classically, it isn't, because a lot of the times Modern is you're taking the deck you're best at and going to try and do the best you can with it, because you're good. You have a better chance if you're good at your deck in Modern than you do if your deck is 5% better to win that day because you picked the right deck for the metagame, especially at GPs when most people are also just playing the good deck, not the deck they're good with, not a deck they picked for that week.
Right.
But in Team Unified Modern, where most of the people you're playing with are picking decks specifically for that event that have been tweaked differently for that event, means that the metagame choice is a lot more relevant than it is to a normal Modern tournament.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's a couple angles here. I mean, one angle is to look and try to figure out what do you think is going to be prominently played and how can you attack that? How can you exploit that? I think another way to think about it is like, don't worry about the metagame too much. Just come up with what's the most powerful thing I can do with my three decks.
I mean, if you look at the World Magic Championships, which was the last high-profile Team Unified Modern event, the super linear but super singular deck types are the ones that saw the most play. So, like, decks like Infect, where most of the cards in the deck don't share copies with other decks.
Right.
Dredge, where it's like that entire deck is just cards that no other deck plays other than maybe a few of the lands that you can tweak to be in your favor. Affinity, where the entire, like, every deck but, you know, Ink Moth Nexus is a purely affinity card. So you have these decks that, those are the top three decks in the format, and that's, you know, 8% was Affinity, 14% was Dredge. Mind you, this is when Dredge was the best deck in the format, and 16% was Infect. And I think in this situation, Death Shadow Zoo is another deck you can probably walk in assuming is going to be relatively well supported just because it's the best deck in the format right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the linear aggressive decks are the ones that people will gravitate towards, probably. I think that strikes me, especially the two you mentioned, Affinity and Infect.
Right.
I think that probably there's a chance if you wanted to burn your, no pun intended, if you wanted to burn your fixing on burn, I think you could probably play Naya Burn as your aggressive deck, and then you could you could play, because there's like other decks that don't interfere. You know, I mean, like if you played Naya Burn, you could probably also play in Affinity, and you could probably also play Merfolk. I would think that's like a good trio. There's like there's a bunch of ways you can definitely play trios that don't step on each other.
Well, and I think we've asked Twitter, and part of this segment is going to be asking Twitter for their recommendations of what they think the best teams are going to be. But if you look at I think what's really interesting about this one is Death Shadow Zoo is the best deck in the format. I'm pretty confident to say that.
Not Death Shadow Zoo. Death Shadow.
Sorry, Death Shadow's Jund is the best deck in the format. And if you keep that in mind, it eats up a lot of cards from other decks. So you can know walking this tournament, Jund isn't going to be a really heavily represented deck. Abzan is probably not going to be able to be very apt represented because people are not going to pick the less good version. Yes, you're going to have people that are good at Abzan, but you're going to be in a situation where these slower, grindier decks are maybe even going to be less represented than normal. So either A, you could have an advantage because people's decks aren't going to be expecting those decks. So by playing Abzan or Jund, you could have an advantage because you're just going to be the only control deck in the room that's not like Grixis control, maybe.
Yeah.
Or build a deck that's specifically bad against Jund decks and normally is hated on by Jund decks, but is going to be good in this format. Which is why I think Affinity and Infector are so classically here, because those are ones that classically have bad matchups.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think playing a mana-intensive deck, the mana base is 100% where you start. That's what you're focusing on here, and I do think that's the biggest determining factor on what deck you're going to play. However, I do think at the highest level, even beyond card availability, you're going to see the pros really try to target what they think is going to show up in numbers. And that's where I think you make your money at this tournament. I mean, not really make any money, because like, Matt, you don't make any money unless you finish in the top like a couple.
No, that's where you'll find success in the tournament.
That's the edge. You have to try to figure out where you expect the tournament to go. And then you also have to play like super tight. Watch, Corey Burkhardt's going to find some way to have all three people on his team play like Grixis. He'll be like, guys, somehow we're all going to play Grixis, and somehow we're all going to make it work.
You're playing Delver with fast lands. I'm going to play with fetch mana base, and you'll play with the check lands, I guess. No, but I mean, the other thing that I do think is important is, if you have a player on your team, and especially have a player on your team that is really good at one deck, you know, you're playing with Jim, who's a made-up person, and Jim is a Affinity master. He's only ever played Affinity. It's the only deck he knows how to play, but he plays with it well. Then you should probably warp your team to make sure he's playing the deck that he's best with.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because I do think you're going to have this is a fun format that is unique, and we don't see a lot, so I think a lot of people will show up for this. I think this is a fun thing, and I think you'll have some players that are probably not as experienced. And so if you are really good at a deck, or you have someone in your team who just knows how to play a deck in and out, then like, yeah, I think they just have to play that deck. It doesn't strike me as and then there's the idea of rogue builds. There's the idea of coming up with something that you are targeting the metagame specifically, and you're saying, you know what, I think I know how this is gonna go, so with that being said, I want to play something really unique,
right?
You know, because this is it's a new format in some ways. It's not quite a pro tour, but it's like you are being asked to problem solve a little bit.
Sure, and I think there will be rewards for coming out with unique kind of ideas. I do think more so than normal, but I do also want to say that a deck that is still going to be very strong, like Affinity, in a non-unified modern event is probably going to be even stronger in this one because they're not going to have as much of the shackles on them that they normally would have.
Yeah, I get that. So let's talk a little bit about some of the decks that jump at us is particularly strong. We mentioned already why we think Affinity and Infect would be so good.
And I can go over the world championships. I have actual percentages that we can go in top most played and the worst. Okay, so Infect is first. That makes a ton of sense, especially back then. This is before Gitaxian Probe got banned, so Infect was one of the premier decks of the format. But it also is what we're saying is, other than Inkmoth Nexus, there's not a lot of cards that deck has that it shares with other decks. Then a little bit more, because it had Gitaxian Probe in it. It had Become Immense, and those were shared with Death Shadow Zoo, because that was kind of a problem. But now that card is banned and the other card isn't really played that much, you have a little bit more freedom here of what cards you're going to play in the deck.
So You just said the one finish at the top. Sorry, I zoned out for a second. Say that again.
Okay, now we're on to Dredge.
Okay, great. That's called an Alex Kessler right there.
Yeah, you just pulled a me where
just
you stopped
that out of your book.
Dredge. is really good. Once again, this is another card that got hurt. Golgari Graveshoal was banned, but Dredge just did really well at the last Modern tournament. So it's obviously still a thing. I think actually I would be really hesitant to not play Dredge at this tournament. I think graveyard hate's going to be low. Partly because of what we talked about. I think, you know, that in general, graveyard deck hate has gone a little bit worse. People are still not completely assuming that Dredge is going to be a really good deck right now. And it attacks at an angle that, you know, your teammate might just get some free wins and help you on your path to victory.
Yeah, I think that decks that are as, like, again, like, decks that are linear like that in terms of what they're trying to do, they're so, like, one strategy so over the top and really, really hard to thwart. It's the same reason that Infect and Affinity are both powerful. You're not playing fair Magic. You're not going turn to turn and trying to grind them out. It's just like, if you're unprepared for me, I'm going to win. Also, because Dredge ultimately is faster than those decks, if Dredge wins, it's going to win faster than those decks.
Right.
You have an edge because those decks are not going to be equipped to deal with Dredge. Most of the really good decks that aren't going to require you to use cards are not that interactive.
I remember sideboard cards are equally shared here. So not everyone's going to have... There's not enough Stony Silences to go around. There's not enough Rest in Pieces to go around. There's not enough Graft Digger's Cage. So, like, each person is either going to have slightly worse than normal graveyard hate, or they're going to have to cut on hate cards. And so you might have a situation where you're benefited by that, and Dredge can just stomp over people.
Yep, absolutely. What we got next?
Affinity, which we've talked about. I mean, Affinity is almost 75 cards that no other deck plays with. I mean, it's definitely almost 60 cards that no other deck plays with. And so you get a huge advantage off of that. And it's still really good. I mean, once again, more than even graveyard hate, artifact hate definitely decreases once you get past Ancient Grudge. Like, you have Stony Silence and Ancient Grudge, and then, I mean, like, you're Shatter Spree. You're now in the, like, 4-mana ones that Affinity can kind of dodge pretty easily just by hitting them in the face.
Death Shadow
Kataki War Wage
is really good, and it plays like 3 copies of Kolo Command, and like,
sure,
that would be my only concern, is that deck's pretty darn good against you.
Yeah, if you're assuming that the best deck in the format is going to be played in the format, then I think Affinity has a little bit more weaknesses.
I don't know.
That's why I think Dredge of these 3 options is the best one. Of these top 3 decks, Dredge is not weak to those problems.
Interesting. So we are going to take a quick break from this countdown right now, and we're going to call Steve St. Clair and inform him that he's on the team. We asked for all of the people that were in the running for their contact information so we could surprise them, and we have Steve's. So I'm gonna call Steve right now on speakerphone, and we're going to inform him that he's on the team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, this is going to be exciting, guys. So I hope he's surprised. I mean, if he's getting a phone call from us, he probably knows what's up, because we don't just routinely call all of our fans, but we're going to give it a shot. That was loud. It's us calling him. I hope he picks up.
It'd be really funny if he doesn't pick up.
Hello?
Hey, is this Steve?
This is.
Hey, Steve, what's up, man? This is Ben Bateman calling from the Masters of Modern podcast. What's up?
Hey, what are you guys calling for?
You gave us your information along with all the other people that contributed, and we wanted to let you know you're on the team. You're on the Masters of Modern team.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
And you're currently being recorded live.
This is on the show. You're on the podcast. We just announced you like 5 minutes earlier on the show, and we figured, you know what? Let's just call him and see if he's pumped up. How you doing, man?
I am great. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, dude. This is exciting. There's so much work to be done. There's so much planning. We have to come up with my silly brew and the 2 good decks you guys are going to play. Just kidding. The good decks we're all going to play. cool, man. Well, are you super excited for San Antonio?
I am stoked. I live in Alaska, so anything to get out of this weather right now would be fantastic.
Excellent. What's your favorite deck to play in Modern?
I'm a big fan of Grixis-style decks, so I've been playing a lot of Grixis Delver to success, so I'm feeling really confident on that.
Excellent. We've done some good coverage on Grixis decks recently with Corey and Pat Chapin. Those guys all love those colors.
And I've listened to every one of them.
That's excellent, man. Well, congratulations. We'll send you a message and get all the, you know, we'll get all the information figured out for coordinating, but we wanted to let you know and give you the big congratulations. I can't wait. We're going to have a really awesome weekend.
I am so stoked. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course, Steve. Thanks for being a supporter of the show. So enjoy your... What time is it in Alaska right now?
It is, it's almost 8 o'clock.
Okay, great. So the time zone's not too different. Well, enjoy your night, and we'll be in touch, man, and congratulations again.
Thank you. Look forward to working with you.
Yeah, of course, dude. We'll talk soon.
All right, bye.
All right, so that was cool.
Yeah.
He was excited.
Yeah.
We should do that more often.
Just call people?
Hey.
Just complete strangers and just be like, hey.
We can call Domino's. Hey, this is Ben Bateman from the Masters of Modern podcast.
I would love to order a Domino's pizza on the Masters of Modern podcast. All right,
So back to the conversation.
Yeah, he's going to play Grixis. So that's actually probably good if you want to keep playing on this dredge plan. They don't share a lot of cards.
He likes Grixis. We'll see. We'll see about that. We got to strategize.
So this is something I want people to tweet at us. I want people to tweet at us what they think the odds are, Vegas odds, that Ben plays Grand Architect in this tournament.
I mean, you know, I've got some ideas. I'm not going to lie. I've been thinking about some things. And, okay. You know, look, I might have some good ideas that involve Grand Architect. I don't know if I'm going to play Grand Architect. We'll see. But, you know, we'll get there. So anyway, you were counting down some percentages. Some of the other decks that jumped out at me. Another one that I thought was really interesting and that really does make a lot of sense is Merfolk. I think Merfolk, it's a hair slower than some of those other all-in linear decks. I don't think you beat...
Merfolk was 2% of the field.
Yeah, I don't think you beat Infect playing Merfolk.
But Infect isn't as good right now, and it has a bad... Fatal Push matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Merfolk's biggest problem is that Merfolk is really, really, really good against the slower three-color decks. So the grindy three-color decks...
No, but Merfolk's really good against Death Shadow Jund, because their deck is all one-drops, so Spraying Seas is literally Stone Rain, because they can't use that extra mana on anything. So by using, getting rid of one of their lands, and they're already really land light, they already play 20 or less lands, you can wreck them with a good and well-used Spreading Seas. I actually really like Merfolk in this tournament.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Merfolk. I mean, Merfolk is definitely... I've played Merfolk in modern tournaments. I've enjoyed Merfolk in modern tournaments. To me, Merfolk feels like a deck you should be prepared to go against, because I do think it's a fan favorite, and I think this is the kind of format you're going to get a lot of fans, big modern fans showing up to. So Modern strikes me, Merfolk strikes me as something that we're going to see a lot of. Other decks that jump out, I mean, ad nauseum.
Currently, like, if I were to draft my team, and this is if I was able to do this, I think it would be Dredge, Merfolk, and Death Shadow Zoo.
You would play Death Shadow Zoo.
I don't think those three decks have many cards that they share. I can't think of any off the top of my head. There's probably something, but nothing insane. And when you get past that, all those decks do really insane things. You get the Tarmogoyfs, you get each deck has their own different specialties, and you don't have a lot of overlap. And you have linear decks, they have a lot of play.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, you get to play some pretty powerful things. I started to mention Ad Nauseam. The biggest reason Ad Nauseam jumps out to me as an interesting choice is because if you look at the mana base in Ad Nauseam, you're dealing with Temple of Deceit, Temple of Enlightenment, Seachrome Coast, Gemstone Mine, Dark Slick Shores, and City of Brass. Aside from Gemstone Mine, that's a pretty unrestricted mana base. You're playing a bunch of inexpensive cards, too. Temples, City of Brasses, those are easy. You played Spirit Guide, Laboratory Maniac. I mean, this deck does not take anything from other decks. Serum Visions. You play four Serum Visions in this deck. That's the only card that's...
That's a thing. But yeah, I agree. Ad Nauseam seems sweet.
Yeah, I guess you can't play Ad Nauseam without four Serum Visions. So if you play Ad Nauseam, that means you're probably not going to be playing a blue tempo deck.
Right.
So there's that.
Yeah.
I guess also you won't be playing Death Shadow Jund. Oh, no, it's Death Shadow Jund now. So it doesn't play the blue cards. Yeah, so you can still play that. So it just... Yeah, so Ad Nauseam would be another one.
I mean, you mentioned Naya Burn. Bant Eldrazi is another big one. My only issue with Bant Eldrazi is its mana base is pretty...
And it plays Path. It plays Path, Hierarch, and...
But in my magical thing that I've just described, none of those decks are playing Path. I think I would maybe splash Path in Merfolk.
If you don't play Infect, you can play Bant Eldrazi, because the lands that you would be playing in Infect plus Path plus Hierarch are all in that deck.
Yeah, I don't think you can play both. I think they are exclusive... Obviously, because of Hierarch, at least.
Yeah, and I think, yeah. But so, I think that's a cool one. I think that deck's really good. How does that deck fare against a lot of the decks we're talking about? Not sure.
It's probably pretty good. I mean, like, Baldrazi is hard to beat. It's really good against Fatal Push. Like, when Death Shadows, I think if we were to rock, paper, scissors the format, I think Death Shadow Zoo and Bant Eldrazi are diametrically opposed.
What about Sun and Moon?
I do like Sun and Moon. I don't know if it's done very well since Gitaxian Probe left the format.
Yeah.
I might be wrong on that. And I'll put foot in mouth if I am. But
yeah.
Once again, Blood Moon, I think, is pretty decent right now, so I don't hate it. Also a good choice.
Blood Moon or
Sun and Moon.
Sun and Moon, yeah. I think Chalice.
Red White Prison. I think prison decks in general are probably as strong. I don't know exactly what build.
Yeah, I think Chalice seems like a pretty good card to be playing in this format. This feels to me like you're going to see a lot of one drops. So unless you get a heavy format that swings in the other direction and starts playing like tons of Tron and Titan Shift and all these decks, Scape Shift, I think probably you see a lot of pretty linear, pretty aggressive decks that people are going to feel like they can storm a tournament with, and that's where I think that actually Chalice of the Void is quite good. So,
Some other decks, Abzan, just straight up, you know, Tarmogoyf, classic Jund version, kind of Abzan, saw a lot of play at the World Championships, and I think that's partly just a lot of players that are really confident with it.
Abzan, to me, feels bad, because that feels like that takes a lot of your lands. That's like a very, very hungry, very intensive deck.
Well, it depends on what your decks are. I'm more now reporting by percentage. That was 7% of the field.
Sure.
It was the fourth after Affinity, or fifth after Affinity, most played deck. So that's a top five. After that, red-green Valakut. I think that deck sounds really sweet in this tournament. People are really hard to beat that deck, and it does a lot of really powerful things without sharing too many cards.
Right.
The biggest ones are the Mountain Forests. So like Stomping Ground, you lose, so Death Shadow Zoo becomes, or Death Shadow's Jund becomes much more difficult. But otherwise, this deck just beats on people.
What about Tron?
I don't like Tron.
Not at all.
Every deck we've just mentioned is bad matchup for Tron, other than Junk.
But Tron, aside from its Ghost Quarters, really does not take almost anything from your other decks.
Sure, but the first thing we mentioned was metagaming, and literally every deck up until, other than Junk, until the 10th deck, which is Jund, and then it goes to Ad Nauseam, Merfolk. Like, this is a really bad field for that deck. And all the top percentage decks in Unified Modern, at that point, and the format is a little different, every deck is a bad matchup.
Right. That's fair.
I guess I don't totally know the matchup between Tron and Lantern Control. I can imagine that being not a great matchup for Lantern, but...
Is Lantern Control a deck you'd want to be playing? You mentioned Prison decks. I mean, is
I
that...
would play... Lantern seems sweet. I think... It has a little bit of a problem because it's an aggressive format, it's sounding like. But I think you definitely have a strength in the sense that Ensnaring Bridge is a really good card.
Yeah, that's fair. With Lantern Control, I wonder what the curve in that deck is like. I wonder if you get wrecked as hard by Chalice in that deck.
You have a lot of one-drops.
A lot of one-drops, right?
A ton of one-drops.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it feels like...
Lantern Insight, Codex Shredder, Ancient Stirrings...
Yeah,
it gets deep,
but that also plays Hand Disruption. So unless they can get the old turn one Chalice against you, you probably get the Chalice out of their hand.
Yeah, the Lantern does eat your Thoughtseizes, but yes, but you have Thoughtseize, Inquisition, Kozilek, and Duress to split between decks. So I think you can go pretty deep there.
Yep.
So yeah, that's kind of the percentages. I want to now go shoot us over to Twitter. Got a lot of people interacting with us, and read off some people on Twitter's three picks.
Sweet.
All right. So I'm just going to go in order. There's @NattyCat. Yeah, so Death Shadow, Bant Eldrazi, Affinity. I think that's a pretty sweet list.
Death Shadow, Bant Eldrazi,
they don't really share anything.
Affinity.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good together.
That'd be fun. Yeah, I mean,
we talked about how Death Shadow and Bant Eldrazi are both kind of two of the premier parts of the format, so I think they do kind of well together. I don't think they share too many cards. I think Temple Guardian is a card that both are a little bit interested in.
Right.
But otherwise, I think that's a pretty good combination.
Yeah, so it must work. This is something we should research or know already, but I'm thinking that it probably going into the standings, like how does it work day two? I mean, you must have, is it as a team then? You probably need to have a record combined?
So the way Team Unified Modern works is you play 3-3. And then you play matches out of it, and two of the matches, if you win two of your matches, you
get
move on
point.
To the next round.
That's how it works.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 3v3 at the table there. It's not all are playing single round.
No, it's not like points among your three teammates. It's you literally play 3v3
Okay.
And move up the standings.
Got it. So, and you're allowed to talk to your opponents during the games, right?
You're allowed to talk to your opponents? Yes. Or, so, and sorry, your teammates.
I mean, your teammates. Yes. That's what I meant. So you're allowed to give advice to your teammates.
Yeah,
and things like
I believe
that.
So.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's cool. So people are going to be asking me for advice on how to play Modern, huh?
Yeah. You're gonna, and being a master, you're going to help them out.
Be able to help.
So Shivanbot at Electrotal, Eldrazi Tron, Abzan, and Elves. Actually, Elves is something we didn't talk about, but I do like Elves a lot. It doesn't share cards with pretty much any other deck, other than maybe the Mutavault, kind of the tribal cards. So I wouldn't play Elves and Merfolk together, Cavern of Souls being a big one. But Abzan, strong deck. Eldrazi Tron is also a pretty aggressive version of Tron. That's the Tron I would play, is the Eldrazi Tron list that are trying to do... You know, make a ton of mana to cast just Thought Knotseers or also Walking Ballistas and other crazy things that you can just get. You know, a lot of colorless mana gets you some big stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Walking Ballista is such a sweet card.
I know, I love that card.
Yeah.
I would be really tempted to take a Walking Ballista Hardened Scales deck to this tournament, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Jack Urbanus at Jack Urbanus, Junk, Bant Eldrazi, and Red Green Valgut.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Titan Shift.
I
think all the slower decks are dicey to me.
Sure.
Or all the even mid-range decks are dicey to me. I think you want to be aggressive. But
I think having tons of removal is necessary, where Red Green Valkyrie gets a little hurt here.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nyaburn, Affinity, and Merfolk. I think Affinity and Merfolk do have some splitsies.
Yep.
Maybe they don't. I guess they don't. No, because they don't. I'm wrong. But yeah, that seems sweet. We talked about all those decks. Seems awesome. That's from Proggy Boog. Eric Landis.
Proggy Boo.
Long listener of the cast. MTG Staples, Affinity, Abzan Company, and Ad Nauseam.
Mm.
So something I do want to say is a lot of these guys, they're coming up with really good...
Trios,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of...
No, but they're all aggressive.
Yes. Some of our conversation with both Steven and then also the second person we're going to reveal soon will be a question of, what people want to play, what we're comfortable with, what we think the meta is going to be. And, you know, I want everybody to play a deck that they're happy with. Like, I think we'll probably come up with a trio based on that as much as what we think strategically will be the best, you know? We obviously want to go and have fun. We want to win, but we want to have fun.
Sure. And then the last person that has written in time was Oopsoup at Nerdgasm. Death Shadow, Ad Nauseam, and Bant Eldrazi.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think those are all three really good decks. They don't share a lot of the same cards. Does Bant Eldrazi play? It doesn't play Seer of Vision. So yeah, I think you're pretty solid.
Yeah, that seems good to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems quite good.
All right, so those are Twitter's answers.
Yeah, so before we get into our conversation about the Lord of the Rings, we are going to talk about the other member of the Masters of Modern team.
Woo! So team Masters of Modern. Yeah, I'm going to be watching for you guys to show up on the...
on the thing.
On the Twitch TV.
I gotta find it on here, so you beatbox for a second. Oh, that's good. That's great. Doing great, Kessler. You're doing... Just keep it up. Yeah. Wow. All right, so we are going to now talk about...
You didn't expect that to happen.
No,
you were just like...
You were really
like,
good.
I was ready for it.
Okay, guys, joining the Masters of Modern team, joining Steven St. Clair and myself on the Masters of Modern team in San Antonio at the end of the month, we have somebody whose name we don't actually know because it's an iTunes review... But we're going to call you out, and you have to listen to this. And no, you are Spartan Minimalist on iTunes. Thank you so much for your 5-star review. You wrote, if you are a modern fan, this is the MTG cast you have been looking for. Alex and Bun put out great content every week, and they always keep things up to date with their ever-changing meta. What is happening in the MTG world? Alex is also super handsome, but not as handsome as Ben. Thank you so much.
He didn't really write that. Yeah, that's
what he actually
up.
Wrote was 2 thumbs up.
I'm just jealous of my mad beatbox skills.
Yeah. That's true. So welcome to the team, Spartan Minimalist. We are so happy to have you on the team. If you exist in the world...
Your team name could be the Masters of Modern's Alaskan Spartans.
Yes. Mystery Alaska. We need you to get in touch with us, is the one thing. Because we don't have any of your information on this iTunes review. So you should follow us on Twitter or send us an email. Twitter is @TheMMCast. Send us a tweet at us and we'll see it. Tweet at me personally, @BenBatemanMedia, or @KessWiley. That's where you can find us.
And if you want to email a email us actually at info@kess.co. That's info@kess.co.
Yes, info@kess.co. Hopefully you hear this and you just think that, man, this is so cool. I want to get in touch with you guys right away because we got to start the planning. We got to start getting to it.
I know. We when you email us, please submit, and this is for all your teammates, submit your three decks that you are best at, that you're good at, and you want to maybe play. And also any decks you might own that you might want to play with. If not, we will be providing helping provide decks. We will also be paying for entry into the tournament. And you'll get some sweet Modern Masters or Masters of Modern swag. And you and Ben and you guys will all do really well. And we'll be cheering for you.
We'll get steaks or we'll get not steaks if you're vegetarian.
Well, you have to go to Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, those are the days.
The people might not know this, but when we used to PTQ together, when PTQs were a thing, we would make sure to go to Outback Steakhouse every single PTQ.
When we get the Bloomin' Onion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that one thing that Robert said the one time? What are you going to order? And he was like, anything with an apostrophe in the title. That's like one of my favorites.
It's really good. All right. So, yeah, that's it for the modern half of this episode.
Yeah. So
now I'm going to tell you the general accepted fan theory of why Gandalf said, "Fly, you fools."
All right.
Can you please do your Gandalf and provide us an intro?
Is it when he says, "Fly, you fools"?
Yeah, that
is
one.
Can I guess?
Can you?
Is it because he knows where he's going to end up and he needs to be picked up by the giant sweet bird that saves him?
Kind of. A little bit. So you're kind of close. So the general theory is that it's the birds. So his plan this whole time was to meet with the King of the Eagles and have them fly the team to Mordor. That was like the only way he could figure out to get there. But he had 2 seconds to kind of let them know what his plan was because he didn't know who he could trust. So he said, "Fly, you fools," because he was like, "Please fly. Use the eagles to get there." And so, like, well, otherwise, why was he calling them fools? They don't deserve that.
Because they were waiting behind for him. That's why. That's what I think it was. They were waiting, and he was trying. That's why I always thought he said, "Run, you fools." I didn't even realize he said, "Fly, you fools."
Yeah, he says, "Fly, you fools."
Yeah, but I think he's saying
it. Back to the shadow. And then he hits the staff, and he says, "You shall not pass."
Well, he's already said that part, because he says, "Fly, you fools," when he's hanging.
No, this is just things he said scene. Yeah. They're not sequentially ordered. "Fly, the fools" is the last thing he says. Yeah, until the next movie when he fights the Balrog, and it's like one of the sicker scenes in movie history.
Oh, it's phenomenal. That's that one, and then he has, I mean, you know, McKellen has
Balrog. I don't.
Ian McKellen might have the second sweetest scenes in the whole trilogy. I mean, everybody has good moments. It's just
the best scenes. You're just wrong.
The death of Boromir is so.
He just like gets shot with some arrows and then gets on his knees and is like, "I'm dead."
And no, then, like, and then Aragorn is like.
And then his like lamer brother shows up.
Oh, you're wrong. He's like, well, yes, Faramir is lamer, but Aragorn's like over him, and he's like,
"You're about to defend Faramir."
And Boromir's like, "I tried to take the ring from Frodo. Forgive me." And he's like, "No, Boromir, you fought bravely." And he's like, "I would have followed you, my brother, my captain, my king." And you're like, "Oh my God, Waterworks is the best thing." That's my favorite part of the whole entire trilogy. Boromir is my favorite character. Gandalf does have some wonderful scenes. One of my favorites also that I always think of, my favorite single scene other than the Boromir death, is in Return of the King when it's that shot of Gandalf riding the horse across the field at the Nazgul, like the big dragon Nazgul thing, and he shines the staff up and the light hits them. That's like one of the sickest shots in the
whole. Are you sure it's not the one where he's running down the hill with the Riders of Rohan?
That's the end of Two Towers.
Okay.
No, you're wrong, because he shines the staff and the light and like the angelic music starts playing.
Uh-huh.
And it's that sick shot where like they clearly have like cameras on horses or something, or on a car probably is more like it.
No, it's horses. He's definitely on a horse. Horses.
And they like pick up him riding to join the Riders, because I think they're headed back from. Where is it? The City on the Sea. They're headed back to Minas Tirith. They have to get back in the gates, right? Because he's just saved the guys.
What's your favorite Lord of the Ring movie?
This is such a hard one. We did on AMA podcast.
I'm assuming it's the second Hobbit one. No, I'm kidding.
We did on Action Movie Anatomy.
Actually, though, of the Hobbit movies, the second one is the better one, but they're all bad. But continue.
The second one's good because it has the dragon.
Yeah, the dragon stuff is amazing.
Yeah, the Benedict Cumberbatch is unbelievable. We did an episode of Action Movie Anatomy called Eight Movies We Can Never Do on the Show.
Okay.
And then we bracketed the eight movies and on Twitter poll, and we ended up like it was the trilogy, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because we don't do franchise movies usually.
What was in the semi? What lost to Lord of the Rings?
I'm pretty sure the finals, it was Shawshank Redemption versus Lord of the Rings. Because we chose movies.
I have this question I ask to people when I'm trying to be intimidating. This is now getting really ranty in different directions. So you tell your thing about your action movie. I'll tell this.
We did the Lord of the Rings Action Movie 90 episode, okay. And it was the trilogy. And we, instead of doing like we normally do fist pump moment, we did a collective 9 fist pump moments from the entire trilogy.
Okay.
Like we counted them down. And the question became, what is your favorite? And it's like really hard to say. There's a strong element to each movie. I think Fellowship's the best movie because it's the most standalone complete. It's like,
I agree with you.
It's got like the beginning.
I think
is really,
the worst one is Return of the King.
Is the longest. Return of the King has so many good moments.
Yeah, but there's like a lot of CGI stuff, and then it never ends. Like Two Towers has some of the better moments.
Some great fighting. Some great action.
Even some great Schmeagol or Gollum is one of the most unique characters in the history of movies, and pretty much all of that is in the second movie.
Yeah, I agree. The eight movies, if you guys are curious, that we had in the bracket, we just chose eight movies that we loved that we didn't think qualified in our like normal movie rankings. If I can remember correctly, the eight movies were Lord of the Rings trilogy, Shawshank Redemption, Jerry Maguire, Boogie Nights, The Weatherman, The Other Guys, Sunshine, and Sunshine's so good.
So good.
And there was one other movie that I probably...
What are my favorite
and The Truman Show. That was the eighth movie.
Okay.
That was our eight. And we love those movies, and we didn't feel... Sunshine, you could almost get away with as an action movie because it has some action in it.
Yeah, no, you could do Sunshine on your podcast.
But that's probably the only... aside from that, I don't think we could do any of the rest of those movies fairly.
Fair.
Yeah.
I know of another podcast that's very successful that would retweet you guys a lot if you did Sunshine, actually.
The comic book movie news,
The Weekly Planet.
Yeah.
Podcast. The one of the main two guys love Sunshine.
It's one of the best.
Yeah. But my point about Shawshank Redemption, I often ask people what their favorite movie of all time is.
Yeah.
And it's a question, not the best, it's their favorite. And if someone answers with Shawshank Redemption, it's the only wrong answer.
Because
it's the boring answer. It's like saying The Great Gatsby is your favorite book. It's like a safe choice that no one's going to judge you on and everyone likes because it's a good movie. I like Shawshank Redemption.
Here's the thing about Shawshank. So I've had this conversation, this argument a lot of times. On IMDb, the top 100 movies, the top 250,
mm-hmm.
Shawshank's number one.
I know.
And the reason is because...
I know something.
Sometimes I've seen The Godfather overtake it before.
I've seen Dark Knight get up there, which
Dark Knight was around the time it was out. What happens, though, is that Shawshank Redemption is quite possibly the greatest film ever made. It's possible that's the case. I don't know that I would argue that it is, but I wouldn't argue that it isn't. Like it's you can't strong sell, hard sell, convince me that that's not the case. It is like the most loved movie.
Yeah, but it's currently number one.
It is like the most loved
Shawshank, Godfather, Godfather Part II, The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also want to say like, don't get me wrong. I love The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight is not
the fourth best movie of all time. Do you see Logan's already number 51?
Yeah, but new movies are because it's wonky.
By the way, see Logan. It's like the
best movie
I've ever
seen. I also don't think 12 Angry Men's the fifth. I don't think Schindler's List is the sixth.
It's you can't rank things like that. There's too many.
We just talked about how Lord of the Rings Return of the King is not the best Lord of the Rings, and it's number 8.
Yeah, they're all great. Anyway, guys, that's going to wrap up the show today. Thanks for listening. Congratulations
to our teammates. Yeah, well,
our teammates.
Your teammates.
Yeah.
My team, but like kind of how the Steelers is my mom's football team and the Browns are my dad's football team, and that's why they're divorced.
We're very excited. This just gets so sad. We're so excited for the GP, guys, and go again.
Not as sad as my dad's football team.
If you haven't already, go and download it. Download Anchor, the Anchor app. It's on your phone, on your mobile device. Anchor, it's short form content.
Subscribe to Ben's.
Yeah, 10 minutes of magic. Yeah. Super fun. It's cool. And you guys, the other cool factor is you guys can call in. So if you hear something,
you're
like...
I'm kind of sad you didn't call it Mini Masters, because it's like...
Mini Masters. It's a mini baby. Modern. But it's not just about modern. It's about all magic.
Yeah, there's no word modern in there. Yeah. It's mini.
And if you guys call in, if you think it's cool, you just record a little call in on your phone, your thought, and I can play it on my station if I think it's cool. I can share it, and then people can hear you and find you. It's like Twitter with podcasting. So anyway, it's awesome. Thanks for listening, guys. And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.